Welcome to the Journey to Multifamily Millions podcast. Start your journey today of building wealth through multifamily real estate investing. Listen to inspiring conversations with experts in the field from every step of the process. It doesn't matter if you are new to multifamily real estate or if you're already the savvy pro, we cover it all. And now your host, founder and CEO of Zana Investments, Tim Little.
Of MI Real Estate. Ray has been actively investing in residential real estate since 2005 and has focused exclusively on multifamily since 2016. He has led MI Real Estate Investing in acquiring 14 multifamily properties in Alabama, Florida, Georgia, Texas, and Tennessee, totaling over 900 units valued at over $100 million. Ray also provides independent consulting to multifamily investors and is the best-selling author of Bluff, The Bottom Line Upfront About Passively Investing in Multifamily Properties. Ray, welcome to the show.
Woo! Thanks, Tim. I appreciate it, man. I'm happy to be here and happy to chat with you.
Yeah, and we're glad to have you. So I gave everyone, you know, a really high-level overview of your background, but I'd really appreciate it if you could, you know, give us the story on your journey in multifamily, how you got started in real estate more generally, and then how you transitioned into multifamily properties.
Great. Will do. Okay. So, you know, it's a long story. That's partly because I'm old. So I'll give you the 5 minute or less interpretation of that. But essentially, I've always loved real estate. Monopoly was my favorite game growing up. I just love the idea of working from, you know, a one unit little building. You know, basically you start with the rental and you work your way up to the hotel, and I like the physical asset that you can feel, you can touch. I'm an Army guy. I can talk a little bit about that, but you know, we hold ground. You know, Air Force flies over, they leave. You know, everyone does something, but essentially, if you want to control territory, you have to be on the ground, and so that's always kind of been something that I always, you know, believed in as well. But I started out essentially buying my own home, like a lot of military people do. We go and we get deployed, or we get, you know, stationed in a particular location. And then that is where we buy our first home. So we buy a home, 2 years later, 3 years later, sometimes less, you got to go somewhere else. So now you've got a decision to make. Do you hold on to that asset, that property, and rent it, or do you sell it? I always chose to rent them. And so over a period of time, I was able to acquire several single family homes that then allowed me to build wealth. Now the one thing that I tell people, because it sounds great, but you know, essentially if you're buying a home for yourself, it's not typically the type of home that is going to give you a lot of returns right away, because you want your family in the best neighborhoods. You want you're going to spend on all those little things that maybe a renter doesn't really, you know, due to the transience of how they're going, you know, how long they're going to be there, they don't care for. So you end up being in, you know, in the black kind of, or maybe just under in the red, or, you know, as you first, you know, rent these things. But over time, they start picking up, you know, your rents go up and your mortgage and everything, expenses mostly stay the same. Taxes go up a little bit, but you build some equity. And so I used that equity from these assets that I bought, these single families, properties. And then when I realized I was getting close to the end of my career in the military, I knew that I wanted to go back into real estate. And I wanted to do it full time. I like the business. You know, you can use real estate to invest, or you can use real estate as a business. And for me, it was always more than just a passive investment. I wanted to do it. But I realized that single family investing is very difficult. You know, for the amount of work that you do in the acquisition of one single family house, you can do a little bit more work and then go after multifamily properties and really build, you know, a little bit more scale in your business if you want to, you know, to have a business, because it's just tough to do that at the single family level, one property at a time. And then, so I guess that's kind of the bigger story. In 2016 is when I actually made the decision that I wanted to do multifamily. And that's about the time that, you know, we really were able to start doing syndications. You know, the Jobs Act was really what allowed, you know, the average individual to syndicate. Before that, it was the rich man's game. So now we're able to, you know, at a much lower level, get in people that can do these syndications and acquire much larger assets. And with the scale of that, really build wealth. And so it took me a little bit from the time I decided to when I started doing it. I really, I did a couple of passive investments to see, to feel the business from the passive side. But to really in 2019, I was involved in my first acquisition as an active partner in the deal. And then I haven't looked back.
No, that's great. And I just want to rewind on some of the points that you made there. So you talk about, I mean, obviously I'm military too and have so many friends that are in the military, and I've seen them just, you know, acquire a property at every duty station they've been to. But like you said, that was their primary residence. They didn't buy for the purposes of investing. And so, you kind of squeeze what you can out of it as an investment property. But when you're not buying with intention, you know, to have it be an investment property, the yields just probably aren't going to be as good as they could be, right? A lot of times you may be cash flow neutral, maybe getting, you know, a couple $100 every month off of the rent. But I think the real benefit, the value that people see in that is really the appreciation aspect, like you talked about.
The paying down of the mortgage and the appreciation is really what gives you builds the wealth. And frankly, that's what most Americans, that's the only way Americans nowadays, a lot of the ones that can afford to buy a house, really build their wealth is through that one acquisition of their personal residence. Obviously, if you multiply that. The other problem with that, Tim, and you know this as well as I, is it's one thing if you're deliberately, you know, doing this, you're being a landlord on purpose. You kind of in the top of your mind, you know, there's works associated with that. And you probably already have an idea of a plan. It may not be great, but you have a plan. But when you're an accidental landlord and all of a sudden you're trying to move your family, you may be going to a new post and you may be deploying and you got this one, you know, house, you know, somewhere else that you're responsible for. And that's either going to be eaten into your money or not. And there's problems with, you know, with whatever over there, even though you have a property manager, you're still going to be involved in the asset management of that asset. And it becomes a part-time job. And people forget that, right? They think, okay, I'm just going to rent this, you know, fire and forget. Well, no, there is no, you can fire and forget, but it's going to be taking money out of your pocket. So that's the other part. And so when you are able to build more units in one place, it makes it a lot easier to manage all of the aspects associated with the business. Whereas if you have them sprinkled everywhere, you're really having to take a lot of extra work to make that work for you.
Yeah. And I think that's what a lot of these folks, the situation they find themselves in is, you know, it's great. They have 3 to 4 properties and they've built up this equity in these properties. But at the same time, like you said, it's costing them, you know, so much in terms of time and money in some cases, for repairs, what have you, but they're not sure what to do next. You know, they don't necessarily want to sell it because they know they'll take a big tax hit. They don't know that there's really any other options other than just getting more single family properties. And that's why I think, you know, syndication is such a beautiful thing. If you could go ahead and just to help baseline the audience, if you could explain to us what syndication is and, you know, how someone who has, you know, 3 or 4 houses, how they might be able to potentially take advantage of, say, passively investing in a syndication.
Okay, good. Yeah, so syndication is essentially a way that you can acquire a property by combining funds and effort, right? Because it's not always just money. You also have to have effort to manage it. But essentially, you know, there's a group of active investors like myself and yourself that really do the, you know, the majority of the work of finding the asset, making sure the asset is going to give the type of returns that we want and we want our investors to have as well, our partners. And then we manage all that. But at some point, then we have to bring in our passive investor partners that are going to provide the majority of the capital. Now, we still put in our own money. Every deal that I do, I put in my own money. I mean, essentially, that's part of it. I don't see this as I'm selling you something. I see this as an opportunity for us as active investors to provide an opportunity for passive investors that maybe wouldn't have that opportunity. And I think the strategy that I talk to a lot of people now, you know, especially for me in the military, right? If you're able to buy a single family home with a VA loan, or you're able to buy it with an FHA loan, something where you don't have to put a lot of money down, and you find yourself 3 or 4 years later sitting on a little equity, figure out what to do with that equity so that you can then take that money and instead of investing in a property in an area next to you where it may not be the best place to invest, you're able to take that money and invest anywhere in the U.S. I don't deal outside of the U.S., but anywhere in the U.S. And your money works most for you, right? Because you're investing where it makes the most sense, which is kind of my motto. You know, you live where you want, you work where you must, but invest where it's going to give you the best return on your investment. And so you just have to pull that money out and take that money. It could be as little as $25,000. It could be more. And use that money and invest in a syndication with people that you trust, that you vetted. And then it really is more about forgetting, because you have an entire asset management team that is above the property manager that is looking after your returns, their returns. When active investors win, so do the passive investors. So it's a win. It's basically a win-win strategy. And it's not a push and pull. The better we do, the better you do. So it's perfect.
Yeah, exactly. And that's that alignment of interest piece mm-hmm. that we always talk about. You know, like you said, we put money in so that we can show the investors that we have skin in the game too. You know, there is not zero risk for us. You know, we have money at risk as well. But at the same time, you know, what is that? Rising tide lifts all boats. You know, if we get that asset to a point to where it's profiting, then we all share in those profits. And you know, just in terms of the military piece too, you brought up one good example. And another way, just, you know, quick tip for folks who are in, they can use that VA loan to get not just a single family house, but they can use that to get a duplex, a triplex, or even up to a quad. And like you talked about, you know, you usually buy a house that fits your family, your lifestyle. That wasn't, you know, hasn't been necessarily an option for me. You know, once you got a couple of kids, it's hard to find some of those properties in the best neighborhoods and stuff like that. But if you're a single person and you got that VA loan, see if you can find a duplex, see if you can find a triplex, even if it's a bit of a fixer upper, because you can be living in one side, renting out the other, and, you know, essentially paying no mortgage. So there's a lot of great options out there, as long as, you know, people educate themselves on it.
And take it a little further. Even if you just buy one house, maybe you buy it in that better neighborhood because you feel comfortable in that better neighborhood. It's safer if you're gone. You don't have to worry as much about crime in the area. But rent out the rooms. If you buy a 3 or 4 bedroom house, they call this house hacking, right? You buy the house, you rent out the rooms. Essentially, your roommates will pay your mortgage for you. So you can kind of even shrink it a little bit further. There's so many ways. I think that's the thing about real estate that I really enjoy, is there's just so many ways to do it, but you just have to get started. And I think a lot of people never get there. They think they're too busy. There's too much risk, but yet they put money in a 401k or something that they don't control. They essentially pick a bunch of funds and they do what they do. But they're concerned about, you know, hey, this is too much risk to put money on a house. I don't know. To me, it's less risk when you can see it. You can you have some control. You have people that you know that are there to take care of your returns versus just putting money in a stock market somewhere. I just talked to somebody yesterday. It's like, I can't even they took a big loss. Now they can't sell because if they sell, they lose. You know, they have to eat it. So now they're going to sit on this loss for a while. I know some people would use the opportunity to buy more at that low point. There's always strategies if you have more money. But if you've been sitting on that and you've been growing that nest egg slowly, guess what? You don't have a ton of money to put into the market now. You basically have to wait and ride it out until whenever that is, with no control over the process.
Yeah, it's certainly nice to keep that dry powder, as they say, so that you have capital to deploy when opportunities arise. But at the same time, when you're pushing against greater than 9% inflation, that dry powder is evaporating in terms of its actual, you know, purchasing power. So people need to be cognizant of that as well. You talked about how you retired from the military after, was it 20 something years?
28.
After 28 years. And I think a lot of people kind of glamorize this concept of, you know, transitioning away from their W-2 job to do entrepreneurial ventures. But I know it's not all rainbows and butterflies. So if you could talk to me a little bit about that transition that you made, did you do a lot of planning as you did that? And what were some of the steps involved? And what were some of the things that maybe surprised you or caught you off guard about that transition?
Yeah, no, the great questions. Hey, you're making me reflect here. It's been a couple of years, but I think what I tried to do is I tried to ensure that my family and I had enough money to kind of pay the bills. So then I didn't have that stress of like, okay, how do I get from, you know, how do I get by next month? Right. And so I put myself in that position through my investments and through savings. And I certainly the pension that I got from the military, that all helps. But essentially I wanted to be in a place where I didn't have to depend on my business for the livelihood of my family. I wanted to give them that security. And so that was the main thing for me. So once I had that, then essentially I was able to start growing my business incrementally. I did not have the pressure that a lot of people have that they just have to acquire properties because they need to, you know, build their income to survive. And so a lot of passive investors, they have a great job and they're doing well. Maybe they tighten up a little bit so they can invest that money instead of just spending it. But if you do that over a period of, you know, 2 to 3 years, 4 years, and you do enough passive investments, you will be in a position where you can make a decision about what you want to do in your future instead of letting the future dictate what you do. And so I think that was the main thing for me. And so if you're young and you don't have a family, go for it. You know, go house hack. Go sleep in a car, do whatever you do. If that's what the drive that you need. If you have a family, you have other considerations, right? And certainly does your spouse like to be in the business or does she just want to support you as you like the business, right? So there's a lot of factors that I think are, depends on each individual. But for me, those are key. I guess what surprised me the most is how fast I was able to kind of grow the business. I mean, I think, it's because when I'm investing in something and I want to spend my money there, it's so much easier when I talk to someone else and explain to them why it makes sense, right? I'm not selling you a vacuum cleaner that I don't use. I am sharing an opportunity that I'm taking advantage of that you should too. But hey, if you don't, that's okay. I mean, it's not for everybody. But you're giving them opportunities and you're opening up people's eyes to ways to live and to grow wealth that just the average person, for whatever reason, doesn't know. And so the more you educate people, that's the way I look at it. I'm educating people. The more they're going to want to invest in you and in themselves through this business.
Yeah, no, that's great. And I think the main point that was coming across to me is, you know, to plan, right? Especially for such a huge life shift as, you know, going from a W-2 to, you know, a more entrepreneurial venture like real estate investing. Because, you know, as we say in the military all the time, you know, failing to plan is planning to fail. And so that's why I kind of cringe a bit when I hear these folks who say the whole, you know, burn the boats kind of thing where they're like, yeah, just do it, just jump in, quit your job. And I'm like, not so fast. Cause I'm with you. I took a similar approach in that, you know, I had enough foresight to know this was coming. So what did I do? I set money aside. so that I could continue to pay the same bills that I was already paying, you know, for a predetermined amount of time to get my business off the ground, you know, to build that foundation. Well, meanwhile, you know, my wife was still going to have her income and, you know, be able to take care of everything else. But, you know, that provided that peace of mind that you talked about. You said security. And for us, it was peace of mind, you know, knowing that we weren't struggling, that we were pretty much the status quo in terms of, you know, money going out and coming in. We didn't change our spending habits at all. And that money was already allocated to pay the bills. So there was no real change in lifestyle for us. And we were able to, you know, keep that peace of mind that we already have instead of freaking out, you know, wondering if I'm going to have to, you know, go look for a job next week.
Yeah, exactly. And it, you know, if you are that kind of desperate, when you talk to others, they're going to understand that, they're going to feel that. And that's also going to impact their decision making on whether to trust you or not. Right. So I think that's important. We didn't really talk about the scale, because I know a lot of people, you know, when you talk about, you know, why not just buy a fourplex, which is an option, versus buying 10, 20, 30 units in a group. It's just that there is so much up. So the returns from that scale are so much better. You're paying less in property management. You're able to carry an asset management team that can do the work and oversee the property's returns for you. Insurance is lower because everything's there. There's just a lot of value of having, you know, going a little bit bigger with your assets. Now comes a certain point where if it's too big, you know, you're competing against institutional buyers, and that becomes much harder. But, you know, we stay in that 100 unit, 150 unit range. Sometimes, you know, we can do that at a level where we can bring in, you know, your average person, your average professional, because it does take some money. This is not an investment you can come in with less than $25,000 in a syndication. I am working on something that will allow more people to get into this business through what's called a regulation CF or regulation crowdfunding, that allow people to come in with five, maybe as low as, you know, $3,000 to $4,000, and getting to some of these deals and be able to get into that scale and that benefit of the scale. But right now we're talking 25 to 50K is kind of your minimum. And then of course, if, you know, and you know this, on a syndication, you do have limits to the amount of people that are not accredited investors. Accredited investors being those that make $200,000 plus or have $1 million in assets, not including their personal property. There's some other rules, but that's the generality. So if you're not an accredited investor, we can only bring in 35 people, sophisticated investors, we call them, into these syndication deals. And so why I tell people, and you talked about it, making sure you have the cash, you know, ready to go, because we essentially can't advertise these deals on social media when it comes to the type of deals where your non-accredited investors can invest in. It's only through knowing you, Tim, knowing me, knowing other active people, and then us sending an email or some sort of personal contact that you'll find out about these deals. And when you do, you really got to move fast, because there's only 35 slots. And sometimes people will sit and they think, oh, let me analyze, and then they lose out on a deal. I've had that several times happen, where somebody is, you know, they're sitting, you're thinking about it, and they had the money, they just were sitting on it, and then they lost their slot. So you got to be ready to move. You have to understand enough about the business, and you have to have those discussions with Tim and I about, you know, the process. So when a deal becomes available, that you understand the process. It's just about understanding that particular deal.
Yeah, and you're right. I think it's just unfortunate that, you know, marketing by its nature has kind of promoted this whole false sense of urgency. So people almost have this automatic like eye roll reaction when they're like, hey, no, seriously, slots are filling up fast. But I've seen deals fund in like 24 hours. And granted, that's not the norm, but it can happen. So it's not just bluster, you know, when we say that, hey, this deal will fill up fast. So if you're thinking about it and you're not an accredited investor, you may want to jump on this opportunity quickly. But I think what you said before is important, in that you know, for those passive investors, this is a journey as well, right? They learn about it for the first time, then they may be skeptical. Maybe it doesn't make sense because they've never been exposed to it before. But the more you educate them, you tell them how it works, you know, they see a couple of presentations, maybe they listen to a podcast or read a book, then it starts to become more real. They start to feel more comfortable with it. And then that's the point where they'll be ready to invest. So, you know, it doesn't have to be a high pressure situation where, you know, the first time they hear about it, hey, they should be investing in a deal. I would say they shouldn't do that at all. They should know and understand how this works prior to ever putting their money in, just like any other investment, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. There was a little bit of a glitch on my end as on the video or on the recording. So maybe it'll show, but I completely understood your point on that. So I agree.
All right, Ray. So I think, you know, having the right tools in certainly this business, but pretty much any business is really important. Are there any tools or resources specifically that you recommend for either the passive investor or GPs like you?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think the first tool is you need to stand it. So get yourself a book that will explain to you essentially what the business is about as a passive investor, right? I mean, even active investors, you can reverse and engineer a book like that because it gives you a better idea of what passive investors are interested in knowing. That's the first thing. So you have that and you have some basic education behind you, whether it's my book Bluff or some other book. There's a lot of books out there that talk about this, but understand what the metrics that you need to pay attention to find out about this deal, right? Whether it's cash on cash, whether it's, you know, your IRR or your annual returns, these type of numbers, which are obviously numbers that you should be paying attention to, that's your return on your investment. And so those are important to know, and how you can calculate that spreadsheet, which is my next one, will do that for you. So a lot of times when you get into these deals, people will present a pro forma or an underwriting of actual deal to explain why they think it's a great deal and what assumptions are part of that, their plan to give you those kind of returns over the next, you know, whether it's 1 year, 2 years, up to five or longer years, and they should be able to show that. And then you being able to take that spreadsheet, at least making basic sense of what it's telling you, is important. So I think between just getting a book to understand the numbers and, you know, what are the key terms, and then having a spreadsheet that you can use. The last thing is, if you're not comfortable with a spreadsheet, doesn't mean you can't do this business. It just means you have to hire a third party that can do the analysis for you. Somebody that is independent of the deal that you can pay $200, $100 to, depending on where you go, and they will analyze these deals for you and give you their independent opinion on what they believe will be your returns on that. And so with that, then you're able to be more comfortable with these deals. And so I think that's important. The other beauty about these deals is, unlike single family, the lender, because a lot of the money comes from the lender, you do use a lot of leverage on this. The lender will also underwrite these. And if it doesn't make sense to the lender from a business perspective, they're not going to lend you the money. It doesn't matter how much capital you bring, unless you bring the entire amount, 100% of that, into the deal. Usually you bring in about 25% that comes from the passive and the active investors, and the rest is leveraged through a lender. Well, that's your first stop. So you know the lender has at least looked at this thing, and they have agreed that that plan is sound, and that the people that are running the business, the active investors, have already been vetted to some extent, at least from a financial perspective.
Yeah, that's great advice. You know, either learning how to do that analysis yourself, you know, at least at a cursory level, or hiring someone, a third party, to do it for you. Because sometimes, you know, you have to put a little money into it in order to determine if something is a good investment. And really, that just protects you from risk. So I think that completely makes sense. Ray, this has been great information. Right now, we're going to move on to our keys to success round, where I'm going to ask you a couple of questions in rapid succession, and we need some good, hard-hitting, quick answers on these. So the first question is, what is the one red flag every investor should look out for, be it passive or active?
I think the red flag that people have to pay attention to is when they are vetting individuals, operators that are doing these deals, is that they vet not only that individual whose, you know, face is on the screen that's, you know, talking about the great deal, which is good, but that you also vet the organization that is behind that individual, whether it's other partners or whether it's that and the organization itself. Because, you know, if, and I mentioned this when we talked, if you are in this business and you must, you know, have X amount of deals in order to live, you're going to be wanting to do as many deals as possible, whether they're the best deals or not, because you need that income. We do have some fees that come from this on the active side for the work that's done. And there's a lot of work that gets done. So it's earned. But nevertheless, if you need that fee to live or have your family live, then you're going to be getting into as many deals as possible and not really thinking about, okay, once we acquire this asset, we still have to execute the plan. We still have to communicate the results, you know, the performance, the progress to our investors on a regular basis. And too many people are just worried about the acquisition. Too many operators are worried about the acquisition and they tout the numbers, but they don't really have the organization behind them. And, you know, military people, we always think about that. That's part of the plan, right? A lot of people don't. I mean, a lot of people they're just going after and getting deal after deal and let the cards fall where they may because they have to. I think that's the biggest one, is bet the organization.
Yeah, that's right. And so, of course, you know, you're going to, you know, that individual, whoever you know, who introduced you to the deal. And that's, you're right, that's a starting point. You have to trust them. But at the same time, you have to look at that team in its entirety and kind of assess their strengths and weaknesses. Do the strengths of one person on that team, you know, counter the weaknesses of another? And are they going to have what they need in totality to see this deal through, not just to closing, because that's when the deal starts, but all the way through to managing that asset until it exits in year 3, 5, 7, whatever the case may be. Because, you know, that some people having, like you said, that short-term mindset of just trying to churn through deals, that's not always going to benefit the investor. So our next question, what is a myth or assumption about this business you would like to set straight?
Yeah, I think the biggest one that I always get is, you know, this is fast money. Yeah, you're going to invest in real estate and you're going to be rich tomorrow, right? And we know that's not the way it is. Essentially, you build wealth over time, but the way you do that is you invest in real estate and wait. And you have to wait. There's a lot of factors that happen between that waiting. If there's a business plan that you're executing to get those rents up and reduce those expenses, to increase the net operating income of that property, another term that you must know, that has to happen. And it's a time process there. You also have to wait for appreciation. You also have to wait for some of that, some of the mortgage to be paid down. But before you know it, it feels like it's a long time, but you have some bona fide wealth, equity in that asset that you have available to you that you didn't have access to. But to think that you're going to invest in a deal and tomorrow you're going to make money, that's not the case. Now, we have had one deal recently where we bought a property. We had a plan to keep it for 5 years and we sold it essentially at the 12 month and a couple of day marks and made the money that we thought we were going to make in 5 years. That can happen too. But if you go in with that mindset, chances are, you know, that you know, there's too much expectation of that happening and things can go wrong. So we want to make sure that people understand that this is a way to build wealth forever, for a long time, not let's get rich quick.
Right. And that's why the transparency of the syndicator, operator, whatever term we decide to use, is so important, because he should be telling that investor, hey, expect to be in this deal for this many years. Now, it may be faster than that, but, you know, managing expectations is really important, because you're right. I think there's a lot of hype out there. And so we just need to be open and honest and transparent with investors and live by that credence that I hear a lot, which is don't wait to invest in real estate. Invest in real estate and wait.
Yeah. All right. It's cliche, but it's so true.
Yeah, and that's the thing with cliches. A lot of times they are true. So the final question I have for you, Ray, what does success look like to you?
Yeah, good question. I think for me, success, and we talked about the fact that, you know, I don't have to do this to live, between my, my income from my pension and everything that I've done so far, I can live pretty comfortably. So for me, I don't see myself as trying to just get rich. That's not what I'm looking at. I'm trying to build a legacy for my family and first and foremost. So I want to teach my children how to invest passively, how to build their own wealth. That's one thing. So there's an education aspect to it that they can only get from observing. You know, they can get it other ways, but that's one of the biggest ways, is just, you know, through osmosis of seeing your family do that. And if you look at, you know, entrepreneurial families, it's usually, you know, the father or the grandfather was in the business, the father's in the business, some son or something is in the business. It kind of runs in families. And so I'm trying to build that so that, you know, whatever my kids want to do, that they don't have to worry about, you know, money for their family. So that's one. The other thing is, I want to be able to give. Right now, I've always, you know, for a long time, I've given to Children's International, or basically an organization that, you know, you sponsor a child. So at this point, I'm sponsoring two children. I've sponsored two children, and just, you know, they give money monthly. I give money monthly, and then I give money for special occasions, birthday, you know, the holidays. And I've always wanted to do that, and I want to do more of that. And so you have to have money to give money, and I think that's where people, you know, they have to remember that, you know, it's not just about you building your wealth for no reason, but what do you do with that? How do you help? You know, I was not born rich. My mother and father were blue collar. So I'm having to, you know, also take care of my parents, my mother at this point. And that, you have to have money for that. So I think you need to have money in order to help solve problems for those that don't have it. And you got to make it. And so that's part of what I'm trying to do as well, is make sure that I'm able to give by having some to give.
Yeah. And so you basically talked about that financial literacy, teaching that to your children by example, right? Showing them what is in the realm of the possible, showing them how you did that. And that's a huge piece for me as well. So I certainly resonate with that. And then the opportunity to be able to give more. You can only give more if you have more. So that makes a lot of sense. Well, all right, Ray, hey, this has been great. I love the energy you bring. And yeah, I think you've provided a ton of value today. So please tell our guests how they can get a hold of you, and if you have anything else you would like to share with them.
Sounds good. I think the easiest way to get a hold of me is through my website, IsmaelRayReyes.com. IsmaelRayReyes.com. I also have mirealestate.us. And a partnership that I have with you and others, which is the Admirable Group. And so there's three different ways, easy searches to find. And from there, we can get on a call. I love talking about this. This is a passion of mine. It's not just something that I feel like I must do. It's something I love to do. And so happy to chat with anybody about this business if they have questions about it. And so I think that's the biggest thing. And I would just hark back to the folks that are actually, you know, thinking about it. And, you know, maybe they have a single family or two here. Everyone I talk to that's in this business, the biggest regret is, why did it take me so long to get started? You know, I wish I would have gotten into multifamily sooner, right? Yes, the Jobs Act and a lot of things, but there were still some ways to get into fourplexes and, you know, small multifamily that would have allowed me to grow my wealth faster, sooner. And so what I tell people is, you know, don't wait, get started. I mean, don't think you need the perfect plan. This is another, you know, thing that we learned in the military. An 80% plan now is better than 100% plan later, because the enemy has actions that they're taking. So sometimes you have to get inside the decision cycle of whatever else is happening outside, whether it's the enemy, if we're talking military, or were we just talking about what's happening in the environment. Get in there, take a step, and invest where it makes sense.
There you go. All right, awesome. Well, we'll certainly have all those links in the show notes to your website, to your book, and provide your email. Again, Ray, I just want to thank you for joining us. It's been great.
My pleasure, Tim. God bless you, man.
You've been listening to the Journey to Multifamily Millions podcast with host Tim Little. Be sure to subscribe to the show wherever you listen to podcasts and leave a review as well to help us reach more people like you. For more information on how you can start your journey to multifamily millions, visit ZanaInvestments.com. And remember, every journey starts with a single step, and there's always more to learn.